Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio. Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio.
Welcome to the latest Indie Prime podcast on Indie Live Radio. In today's edition, we are listening to Chris McElney, who's giving a talk and Q&A to Milgai branch of the Scottish National Party regarding the proposal for Plan B to be discussed at the forthcoming SNP conference. Chris McElney is Senior Councillor, Leader of the Council for Inverclyde. He's also a member of the Scottish National Party National Executive Committee.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Well, thanks very much for letting me come along. I suppose a bit of background was maybe at the start of, well, the end of last year, we had started putting some opinion pieces into the National just to try and gauge people's views on current independence strategy and the intransigence of the Prime Minister at the time, Theresa May, who seemed to have a sustainable strategy for well over a year, of just saying now is not the time, every time we wanted to talk about independence. So various people, through myself, Jim Sillars, Angus McNeill, were starting to talk again about the idea of, well, of the UK government continue to just say now is not the time, and we want to stick to the kind of gold standard of the Edinburgh Agreement for a Section 30 order, which alters what was known as Article 5, so that the Scottish Parliament can have the devolved power to have a referendum. Well, if they keep just saying no, now's not the time to that, yes, absolutely, momentum is growing. And as you've seen with the opinion polls, 52% now, when you factor in undecided saying that they would vote for independence. So that the polls are certainly surging in the direction of people coming across to support independence. And absolutely, with Boris Johnson and the farce of Brexit, that's been a key catalyst in that. But ultimately, if we continue to allow the United Kingdom government to have the power of saying, well, no, we don't agree to a Section 30 order, we felt there was a worthy debate to be had for, well, how do we then progress with democratic gusto, for want of a better phrase, our case for actually having a referendum or having independence, of the simple strategy of Theresa May at the time just had to be to keep saying, no, now's not the time. So then when we got into the kind of conferences, and I think it was quite clear that Boris Johnson was going to become the next Prime Minister of the UK, so Angus McNeill and I put forward a resolution to conference, basically just to set out where we were. We were leaving the European Union most likely on the 31st of October, even though, as the arguments we all know, the people of Scotland overwhelmingly voted to remain in, etc. The continued democratic deficit after democratic deficit, whether it's universal credit, welfare reform, the rape clause. So we wanted to call on the United Kingdom government to give us that Section 30 order so that we can have the referendum. We've got the mandate through the 2016 manifesto, the 2017 manifesto, and basically every electoral victory since the referendum of 2014. But one of the key elements we were saying was, well, if we call on, so if you remember actually in 2017, the First Minister took through Parliament, we had a vote, Parliament majority voted to have a referendum. The First Minister wrote to Theresa May for the Section 30 order and she just simply never responded. So 2 years on, when we previously asked for a Section 30 order, set out our plans to go forward, we were just ignored. Then we were told now is not the time. And when Boris Johnson has now come into office, he's been a lot stronger. His new Scottish Secretary is basically saying, "Nope, it was settled for once in a generation, this issue's gone, we're not going to allow you to even discuss it." And the reality with the current Tory government is that they don't even want Scotland to have a choice. Basically, here's your cereal, eat it, you had your chance at self-determination. It was a one-day gig on the 18th of September 2014, and you decided you don't want to determine your own future, so you're never getting a shot at it ever again. So that's kind of what we're up against. So the conferences committee decided, no, they didn't want us to take the resolution forward at that point. They didn't think we had engaged the wider membership enough. So I suppose, to be clear, we didn't agree with that position, because over the last few years there's been ample, whether it's on NATO, whether it's on the party policy being to support a second EU referendum. None of these big policy changes had to go through years of engagement with members. They simply went through the democratic structures, got a conference, and we had pretty good debates, I must say, on them. So we decided then that perhaps to progress it, there is a as you've seen the agenda, there's not a lot of new meat on the agenda, probably because of the tumultuous period we're going through in politics. All eyes are on Brexit, obviously. So there's a motion from John Swinney, the Deputy First Minister, and Marie Todd, which is basically celebrating 20 years of the Scottish Parliament, which is on the paper, as you can see there. So we actually thought, well, that's a really good opportunity, because for independent supporters, the whole point of the Scottish Parliament wasn't to just live with devolution forevermore. The whole point of devolution was to actually take control of services such as the NHS, and actually over the past 12 years under an SNP government, we've been proving that we can deliver devolved services better than other parts of the UK. Not that that's the whole point of independence, to be better than anybody else, but we've proven that when we get the resources and we get the responsibility, we're just as capable as anybody. Surprise, we're just as capable as anybody else in the world at delivering services. So we actually thought, well, this motion should grow. So surely the whole point of the Scottish Parliament, for an independence movement point of view, is to actually deliver independence. So on the amendment, I've kind of broke into 2 points, just so we can be clear on the difference between them. So point one of the amendment, we're calling on the UK government to use a Section 30 order to make clear that making provision for an independence referendum falls within the competence of the Scottish government and the Scottish Parliament. So going back to before 2014, so when we won the majority in 2011, the Edinburgh Agreement obviously didn't exist at that point, and there was actually a bit of a legal debate on, well, does the Scottish Parliament actually have the power to hold a referendum, or does it actually lie with the UK government? But to be absolutely clear at that point, because we were definitely going to have that referendum, the decision was made to have the Edinburgh Agreement use a Section 30 order to alter Article 5 to devolve temporarily the powers to the Scottish Parliament. So the first key substantive point we're making here is that actually we don't agree. We believe that the Scottish Parliament is sovereign, and the Scottish Parliament should forever have the power to determine its own future. We shouldn't, if we want to go and ask a question on a fundamental issue about the future constitution of Scotland, have to go and ask permission for the very state that we're trying to gain independence from. So we're hopeful that the first point is pretty non-contentious, that most, if not all, SNP members and independence supporters would agree and accept that, well, yeah, of course the Scottish Parliament should have that power, that it can call a referendum when the democratically elected government of Scotland brings to our parliament, which is full of people that we send there to represent us, and if they vote to have a referendum, then that's democracy. So we're hoping that point's not contentious. But the reality is we don't deal with a UK government that are, well, first of all, it seems sane, but secondly, and quite importantly at the moment, they're clearly not democratic at all. I mean, Joanna Cherry and another group are actually having to, as you've seen today, they're having to go through courts to actually stop Boris Johnson just basically shutting Parliament down for the week so that he can take the United Kingdom out of Europe, even without Parliament's consent, on a no-deal basis. And we've seen for the last 3 years what that means. And I know a lot of people think that we're talking about scare stories, but as we're actually getting closer to that, we're actually starting to realise that whether it's food, whether it's medicines, whether it's the Northern Irish border, these are real issues, and these are going to be issues that absolutely harm Scotland, they're going to harm the economy, they're going to harm young people's life chances going forward, and it's certainly not going to be good for anybody. So that's the government we're up against. So, yes, we're speeding the legislation through the Parliament. I think it perhaps should have been done before now, because we could have left the EU without a deal in the 31st of March, and we'd have been sitting out of Europe at the moment in a pretty bad position. So the legislation's getting put through Parliament, but if Boris Johnson still believes, that is, if he's the Prime Minister, because who knows what could happen over the next 6 months to a year, if he believes that our Parliament will again, just like in 2017, say that there shall be a referendum on Scottish independence, but all he's got to say is, well, no, I don't agree to that. You've had your once-in-a-generation referendum, now is not the time, no means no, etc, 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 every Tory leaflet you've seen for the last 3 years. So if he thinks that's all he's got to do, then of course that's what he's going to do. So that was the point of our second bullet point. If the UK government refuses to accept that people in Scotland are entitled to a choice in their own future, then we've got to find a democratic means of ensuring that Scotland's voice is heard. And that's why what we were calling on conference to accept is that in the next, whether it's the next UK election or the next Scottish Parliament election, whichever of those comes first, if we want to have a referendum to determine our own future. That's our preference. But if the United Kingdom government continually refuse and are intransigent and refuse to accept that there should be another Edinburgh Agreement 2.0 to have a referendum in line with the same standard we had in 2014, then that leaves us in a situation of, well, continually just saying, let's just keep fighting elections for another mandate. But how many mandates do we need? I mean, I think we're already on our quadruple lock mandate. We won the general election in 2017, which you might have forgotten because we've seen three or four Lib Dems and three and four Labour MPs and a couple of Tories splashing champagne because the SNP lost that election. But actually, we won 35 out of 59 seats. And across the world, when you win over 50% of the seats, that's called a landslide. And with a landslide, you go and enact your democratic mandate. And from our point of view, that was to progress the case for independence. You move on to 2017, of course, with the council elections as well, which we won across Scotland. And then we had the best ever result in the European Parliament election there as well. And that's all on top of the mandate we got in 2016, the highest ever amount of constituency votes, returned an SNP government for a record amount of years in government. We've got all that already. So again, to say that we're going to just we've huffed and puffed, we've marched ourselves up to the top of the hill again, but well, the UK government just says tough, you're not getting a referendum. Well, we'll go and fight the election in 2021, and it will be a pretty concise vote for the SNP, as well as all the good policy initiatives that we'll continue to protect, such as free bus passes, free personal care, all the reasons that people put trust in us over the last 12 years. You'll get a referendum on Scottish independence. Who's to say the UK government don't just say, well, we know what we need to do, we just tell them no again. It's still not the time. We're out of Europe now. It's only been a couple of years. Give it a chance, Scotland. Lead the UK, don't leave the UK. The sound bites that we've heard over and over for our whole lives. So that's why we think it's absolutely essential that, well, we need to take the game to Westminster, because simply playing the UK government and Westminster by their rules doesn't work, because they'll move the goalposts at every single opportunity. And particularly with 52% now believing in Scottish independence, when Brexit happens, I think that's going to go up. When there's an actual campaign for Scottish independence, the same way with the Yes campaign in 2014, I think we could be pushing upwards to 60%, 65% in favour of Scottish independence. Now, I don't see any sane UK government prime minister, even if they did claim to be a Democrat, agreeing to a referendum when they're absolutely sure they're going to lose it this time. So we're going to be in that situation of, well, what does that actually mean? How long are they going to try and frustrate Scotland? How long are they going to try and deny our democratic mandate to have that referendum? So that's why we think that by putting democratic pressure on the government, by saying that if you don't give us a referendum that we want, you don't give us a referendum that actually the majority of Scotland now also want, if you don't give us a referendum so that we can campaign for something that 52% of the population at the moment in Scotland want, well, we'll make sure Scotland's voice is heard at the ballot box. So if a SNP electoral victory in the next Scottish Parliament or the UK election, if that came first, meant that a majority of pro-independence MPs or MSPs were elected, well, that's our mandate to enter into negotiations for independence. Now, a lot of people in the movement, particularly within the SNP activist space, I've seen, have been calling this quite radical, quite left field. And I dug out the 1997 SNP general election manifesto last night. That was actually what our policy was then. It was that we would, a majority of SNP MPs would give us a direct mandate to then enter into independence negotiations with the UK government. And after, say, a 6 month to 12 month negotiating period, we would then put that mandate that we had to enter into those negotiations to the people of Scotland in a referendum for them to assent for us to declare independence. So what we're saying here is, as time moves on and as the UK government continues to change its strategy and its tact with Scotland, perhaps we've also got to be able to adapt so that we can ensure that we absolutely keep progressing the case for Scottish independence. So that's, I suppose, it might be complicated, but really it is quite simple. It's first of all calling on the UK government to respect the sovereignty of the Scottish Parliament and use a Section 30 order to say that if we want to have a referendum of Scottish independence, we can have that when and whenever we want, because that's what a democratic sovereign parliament can do. But the second important point there is, well, if the UK government refuse to do that, then we think we need to start taking the fight for independence to the UK government by actually putting them under pressure and holding Boris Johnson's feet to the fire so that he's absolutely scared of the prospect of losing an election, and that may well then pressure him into giving us that Section 30 order, because he might fancy his chances a bit better than that. But I'm pretty sure we, our team of activists across Scotland, that if we get that referendum campaign, I'd be confident this time we're going to win it. So be absolutely delighted to hear any questions, but obviously I would be quite grateful. You can see the list. I should add that Carol Monaghan MP, she's not on the list, but she's also backed the amendment. We've got quite a growing number of activists, obviously, you can see through the amount of branches that are starting to support it, and ultimately I think that's quite a good thing, that policy perhaps doesn't even get set, but certainly gets debated through the grassroots power of members actually asking for something to make it onto a conference agenda. So thanks, convener.
Thank you very much. Anybody can ask questions. Ian,
can please. I just make a few observations? The English Parliament is never ever going to agree to us being independent. They're never going to want us independent, so it's always going to be a struggle. Okay. Secondly, if we just declare UDI and walk away from it, people say, "Ah, but the rest of the world's going to treat you differently." They're going to treat us differently anyway. It's not going to be easy when we first get independence. Don't anybody think we're walking into, I don't know, clover. Right? It's not going to be like that. It's going to be hard. But we can prove ourselves. And when we prove ourselves to the likes of the Europeans and further abroad, they'll come on board with us. We have a lot of friends in Europe as it is. We can support you once a month. From Alan Smith, how much that the Europeans support our cause. So, taking all that on board, how much of a mandate do you need? We've had 56 out of 59 MPs down there. We've had all sorts of majorities up here. The time's long past when we've had the mandate that Nicola wanted, right? If we don't get the independence just now, we need Scotland to give us a mandate. The electorate have given us a mandate. There's not enough people voted against us. Not many people have voted for us. Not enough people have voted against us to stop us.
Everybody's points in, and then maybe I could respond.
To add to Ian's point, we have to look at the Catalonia question and how that was treated. I think it's very important. We know what happened there.
Yeah.
I don't think, as Ian said, they're going to let us without sending troops into Scotland for other police forces. Mm. Our police force won't stop us demonstrating, I don't think. That's the feeling I kind of get when I'm talking to police officers. But the Catalonia question is there.
I just like to confirm what Ian has said, and I've said this very often. The old leaders of the SNP would be amazed at the fact of sat in a majority for 12 years. The old policy was if a majority was secured, to try and introduce something at Westminster measure bill with that, and if that failed, we'd still keep having to for negotiations to be entered into. It should be in at least talks about talks stage now. It's been unfortunate that we've moved in towards this, the referendum thing. It's been a sort of delaying element, but that's it is. It seemed as Alex Salmon was a kind of referendum fan. Referendums are tricky things, but true, that people that Ian has said, though we have the backing of our allies in Europe, but That's not to say here.
Okay. Anybody else?
When you join a club, you don't join forever, right? You're not happy with that club, there's a get out clause that you can get out of that club. You don't ask permission of the rest of the club to leave. And if you've got the situation where you can leave, why do we have to ask them, can we please leave?
Yeah.
Because we're not happy. Do you see what point there? Is there something in the constitution that says you can't go unless we give you permission?
I think we should contrast the situation in Scotland and our campaign for independence to the United Kingdom government and its attitude to the European Union. The UK government didn't go and ask the European Parliament,
that's right,
is it okay if we have a referendum to leave? They didn't say, well, we'll only have a referendum to leave if you tell us it's okay to have a referendum. They decided we want to have a referendum. Referendum is the result that I don't particularly agree with. But I think what everybody in Scotland does agree with is that it should be the people of Scotland that determine whether we are a member of the EU or EFTA or whatever our future relationship with Europe is.
No, how is it they're allowed to walk away from the EU without the EU's permission?
Yeah.
We can't.
Well, I think that's exactly why we need to continue to show that we have exhausted every democratic measure possible. So that even as you're talking about our relationships with other European nation states, they'll be watching on, and it's just democratically not acceptable to continue to deny people in Scotland that democratic choice. And I think people, UDI, Unilateral Declaration of Independence, it's became this kind of scary phrase, but it would be a unilateral declaration of independence of the Scottish Parliament just said right now, we declare we're an independent state. But that's not what we're calling for here. We're calling to use a democratic plebiscite at a general election or a Scottish Parliament election. If the UK government refuse a referendum, then it's absolutely democratic for us to say, here is the manifesto of the Scottish National Party to every door in Scotland. And when you go to vote, a vote for the SNP is a vote for the Scottish government to enter into independence negotiations. That's neither Catalonia nor UDI. That's democracy. That's going to a ballot box and actually voting for something. And when you get an overwhelming victory at that election, that government's then enacting that mandate. So it's neither UDI nor Catalonia. But then, if we get to that point that the UK government, despite saying no, we're refusing to support a referendum, despite saying you've just returned another majority with a clear mandate saying that that is a vote for independence, well then that means we do need to make a choice at that point. Does the Scottish government say, well, we wanted to do the referendum in line with the Edinburgh Agreement? He says no to that. We wanted to declare independence via getting that mandate at the election, but you refused to enter into negotiations with that. Well, I guess at that juncture, we've got a choice. We could have a referendum without the consent of the UK government, and we could see what that result is, or what Parliament, with the mandate that they received at that election, could declare that a mandate for independence. But the key point is you cannot progress the argument of we get ourselves trapped, as you say, sir, in a referendum argument of, well, we only get to have another referendum when they decide they're willing to sit down at the table and play with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure they'll wait until they think they're in a much stronger position to win another referendum before they allow it. Whereas the UK state is on its knees. It's its weakest it's ever been in history.
Aye.
Across the world, other nations took advantage
Aye.
To gain their independence. Mm-hmm. We're going to take advantage democratically at a ballot box, but we need to strike now, because the support for independence is absolutely there. And if we get a campaign up and running to actually win that independence, I've got absolutely no doubt we're going to bring 50-60%, even more people across to the argument. But we absolutely need to make sure they know we mean business, and we're not willing to just say now is not the time and no means no forevermore.
Can I just ask a couple of questions?
Yeah.
I don't disagree with anything you're saying, obviously. It's just about, so, is it not a bit ambiguous, the second part? Like, what is a pro-independence electoral victory? Is that just for SNP or across all the parties?
Yeah, it's a good point, and it's, I suppose it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. People say to us, well, you don't want to be too specific because it ties you down to a specific viewpoint. Some people say you need to be a wee bit open so that you can be flexible. I think what this does is this is a clear mandate of us instructing that the next manifesto has to contain this commitment, and it's then up to the leadership of the party to actually work out logistically what we mean. For me, if it's a Scottish Parliament election, I think we know there are pro-independence candidates, whether that's Green MSPs or SNP MSPs, and that combined total of anyone standing, because I know it's been a wee bit topical this week, anyone standing, yes, anyone that's standing under a manifesto commitment that they are a pro-independence candidate, a majority of those candidates is a pro-independence majority. When it comes to a UK election, it's, well, first past the post UK system is not the most democratic. They've been using it against us for many, many decades. So it's a wee bit more simpler this time. SNP would be the vehicle in a UK election, and that would be a majority of SNP MPs. We've already got that at 35. I think that 35 will go upwards again towards 50 again, or this was the ticket we were standing on.
56. Chris, I agree with your passion, you know, to move things on. It's just, right, Nicola's been saying that she got the mandate on the grounds that if there was material change,
yeah,
and specifically said being taken out of the EU, and we haven't, we're almost there, we're holding on by fingernails, as it is, it's sort of crumbling beneath us, but we're not there yet, and the mainstream media has got to cope with Brexit at the moment. And I'm just a bit concerned that if this became an issue before October 31st, and I presumed October 31st was not chosen, you know, randomly, I would reckon that there might have been some thought that, well, the SNP conference is coming up earlier in October. I don't know.
It might
maybe
have been
that's paranoid,
because everybody's dressed up in fancy dress, we'll not notice that the country's going absolutely crazy.
But I think my point would be, I was just a bit concerned that for the 2 weeks after conference up to 31st, all we'll get is a blanket, they're at it again, the separatists, all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, on the doorstep and at the stalls, and I'm sure a lot of people in here, some people will have come across it, where folk are just teetering on the edge because they're so terrified with what Brexit represents.
I think it's
and they see the independence, they're starting to come around more and more numbers. The independence is a safety blanket, is a way out of this terrible mess. But they're also still susceptible. We still get the signals from that day's Daily Mail or Telegraph. And if this concerned that at conference, if the mainstream media decided to, they would make a huge thing of it. So for the 2 weeks up to October 31st, the absolute horror of Brexit would get diluted.
I think that the point on material change is a really good point, because that material change is, it was very smart language, I think, from the First Minister herself.
Yeah.
It's such as leaving the European Union against the will of Scotland, but there are other material changes. Uh-huh. For example, we're on the third UK government since the 2016 election that the people of Scotland didn't vote for. So for me, that's a material change that we're now on to with David Cameron, and then we're on to Theresa May, two Theresa May governments that the people of Scotland never voted for, a Boris Johnson UK government that nobody actually voted for at all, Trident nuclear weapons being renewed at a cost of £205 billion. I think there are massive democratic outrages that to me are also material changes that perhaps have not put the focus on them because Brexit has been this massive dominated. It's similar to how UKIP became a political party, because that was the only issue you ever seen on your TV, and that then obviously beams UKIP into getting a seat in the European election back in 2014. But it is a good point. But on the 31st of October, if we leave without a deal, we're then in a situation that 80,000 to 90,000 jobs in Scotland could be lost because of that. The economy is going to shrink at a rate that makes the credit crunch of 2008 look like it was nothing whatsoever. So if that would have happened on the 31st of March, we absolutely were in no position whatsoever to actually give Scotland a choice between, well, this is the situation, it's Boris Johnson's no deal Brexit Britain, or there's a general election coming up, or there's a Scottish Parliament election coming up, and you've got the option at those elections to actually vote that you would rather the choice of Scotland determine its own future by becoming an independent country at the ballot box, or stay part of Boris Johnson's no deal Brexit. And I think that's the choice that actually gives the Scottish Government and the First Minister. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a stick that she's got here to say, well, actually, if you refuse to play ball with us and give us that referendum, we give people a choice, because the country is clearly outraged that your disastrous no deal Brexit, Prime Minister. But what do? Because, well, are we going to have a referendum in Christmas? No. So are they going to agree to a referendum into the early new year? I don't see them agreeing to a referendum at all anytime soon. So you're pushing towards 2021. You could be out of the European Union with no deal for over 2 years. Imagine the damage that would do to the economy in Scotland, people's life chances, jobs, medicine, European workers, that care workers that what we rely on for
what is it, they've said minimum wage for them, it's 36,000,
who earns
that?
Well, we had that conversation the other day, and between us we could only think of maybe two or three people in our circle of friends that actually get paid that amount of money.
They brought people all in, they had the option at the end of 3 months, if people are not earning, to put people back, they didn't sign it up, and I've said all along that's to run the underground, to clean the toilets, to clean the offices all in London, they want cheap labour, and that's what it's all in, it's all from the south east.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason they didn't sign up to that.
So, I suppose, a final point for myself.
But
we've called this independence Plan B because we still support Plan A.
Yeah.
Plan A is a referendum. Plan A is continuing to win over undecided voters, go out their doorsteps, tell people that they should have a choice between that no deal Brexit Britain we're talking about, or Scotland becoming an independent country like all the other ordinary countries in the world. That is Plan A. But there's got to come a point that we accept that if the UK government thinks that Plan A is going to win, and it's going to win big, and people in Scotland are going to take that choice to become an independent country, if we're being honest, hands up, does a single person in this room think the UK government's going to agree to a referendum under those circumstances?
No.
Well, what? One?
I'm not. Well,
I think... Just the direction of travel in England is that Brexit is the most important thing. And they know that it's not that in Scotland. And we've seen the polls where there's more support for Brexit.
Yeah.
Even if Scotland
left the Union.
And do you know the most worrying poll? That Boris Johnson's more likely to win a general election and get an even bigger majority as Prime Minister if he takes the country out on a no deal Brexit. Imagine that's what we're up with. If Boris Johnson takes the United Kingdom out of Europe on a no deal Brexit, the polls show you that actually gets him a bigger majority and more people in England vote for him. That's quite frightening. But then I don't think that Prime Minister is going to be likely at all to then support any moves towards a referendum when he's clearly going to be resurgent.
But that doesn't matter if you're talking about giving Scottish people a choice, the no deal, independence.
Yeah.
Perfect.
It's a simple choice, yeah.
But the thing is, if he gets out on 31st of October, as you say, the polls are all showing he's got a big majority, because then that does away with Farage and the Brexit Party. He's taken them out of, and that's it. That's all they want.
Yeah.
And the thing is, again, in England, they want out, but it's the money folk want out. Once they hit, the same as ordinary folk here that are working part-time or university, they're not interested in them. The Tories only want out because of the Offshore Tax Directive, and that's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
Maybe that's me, but that's what it all comes down to.
If we had our own, or declared a referendum ourselves, we had our own referendum, and the Unionist parties refused to take part, and the yes vote in that referendum was not more than half the whole electorate in Scotland. They would never accept that. They would always say that was never a majority.
Yeah, well, I think that's why we've got to absolutely evidence that we are trying to achieve independence through every possible democratic avenue before we consider, well, should we have an advisory referendum? And it absolutely would be. The Spanish situation is different for Scotland. Right. I know the Unionist press like to continually raise that because there are issues there. But I think that plan E is, we have the referendum in line with the terms of the Edinburgh Agreement, but we shouldn't need to rely on the UK government giving us that agreement every time, and that's the first point of our amendment, is actually the Scottish Parliament should have the devolved consent to have a referendum, if they want to have a referendum on Scottish independence, to take us out of the United Kingdom to become an independent country. But if we don't get that, I think there's got to come a point that for all the will in the world, as much as we say, well, let's just keep trying to convince people that they should support independence and get support to continue to grow. How do we actually achieve independence if we've got all the support in the world? But we've actually boxed ourselves into a corner of saying we'll only ever get independence via the consent of the United Kingdom government.
And that would put people off if they don't go for that, because you've got that support at the moment, and as it climbs higher, if we don't get it, we're going to lose that support.
Yeah.
That's... when you would lose it.
Did Nicola now say that there will be a referendum next year?
If there's a Section 30 order, so that to have a referendum.
She's still pinning on that.
Completely on if there's a section. Not just there will be a referendum.
No, she's pinning to that section.
It's pretty clear that there should only be a referendum if it's within the established gold standard, is the phrase of the Edinburgh Agreement. But I think that the whole point of the Section 30 order, as much as we are saying there should be a Section 30 order to forever devolve that power to the Scottish Parliament, that is the UK government give us consent. So by the very definition, we can only achieve independence through that strategy by the consent of the United Kingdom government to allow us to have the referendum in the first place. We win that referendum, of course, we've got that devolved power to declare ourselves an independent country, but only if we get the consent and the permission if they say it's okay in the first place.
In other words, it's time to stop asking, time to take it, and we've got to plan out what we want to do, and that's it.
I'd agree.
Was there not something in the Scotland Bill about they changed something? I can't find it, I was trying to search. To do with Scotland having another referendum. Is that not part of the problem of why we're having to be so patient and bide our time?
Yeah, I would need to check that. I think we've got the power to have. So, for example, we're putting the legislation through the Scottish Parliament, so we can have referendums. There's an issue where with councils, etc., actually organise them. But it's the Section 40 alters Article 5, which is the actual enabling mechanism for how we would then say we have voted for independence. We're leaving. So without that, we're still in that situation of, well, technically you're unilaterally declaring you're independent on the back of an independence manifesto, and that is going into an independence referendum, and that is going into the Catalonian territory.
Today in Sky News it said that we're up the head of the queue again for deals with America.
Well,
first in line for chlorinated chicken.
Well, that's not because America are being charitable, is it?
No,
America smell blood, and they see that the UK is weak, and whether it's the NHS or chlorinated chicken, everything's. I think Donald Trump said that nothing's not on the agenda.
But you can't wait for the chicken, and you can't wait for the people going to
diabetic
shop.
Absolutely.
You've got to say.
No, I've heard some people say that before, but for me, it's unacceptable to let people feel pain before we actually. When independence, we've got a responsibility to stop that happening in the first place.
Chris, you were talking about is it the majority of Scottish people to support independence? Is that what you're saying?
Well, if we have a referendum that's 50% plus one vote, yeah.
And next year is 700th anniversary of the Declaration of Our Growth.
It is.
So... Mm-hmm. it would be very good timing if the majority of people, when the idea of the Declaration of Our Growth is the sovereignty of the Scottish people, and the sovereignty of the Scottish people is shown in a referendum by a majority agreeing to sovereignty. Next year is just perfect. Perfect because it's the declaration of the
For lots of people, it's important. Maybe lots of people don't get the historical importance, but I think it actually shows that Scotland's actually been a modern European nation for over 700 years. So this isn't actually something new that we're asking for. It's something pretty normal.
Did somebody put up? I'm not on Twitter, but you know how you can get people's, and you can't reply, but I read an awful lot. I've got about 20 windows at least open on my phone with it all. But somebody put up that tonight. Who's Scotland's oldest alliance with England, France? Who have they done trading with over the years? Bump, you know, like languages, all the things, the Enlightenment, that, and it's all that information. We've always been. I was on holiday in 82, and I went to Portugal with the Machos Rosy wine. And the bottle, the house in the bottle is in Vila Real, the north of Portugal. We went in, you can go round the house, it's a museum now, part of the still the vineyard, and in it is all the paperwork, translation in England, and it's trading between a Porto and Leith. From 1500s.
I know it's maybe it's not so popular, like looking back to maybe the kind of some people in the modern SNP, because Mary Queen of Scots was married in Notre-Dame Cathedral, and we had an alliance with the Spanish as well during the last Jacobite uprising. But again, that's maybe just the boffins amongst us that are quite excited about that. But I think you need to actually know where you've came from if you want to know where you're going.
That's right, because it's the same.
Chris, did you listen to the podcast yesterday?
No.
Right, can I address the point then that's raised by Gil Patterson, that Plan B disenfranchises those who are Tory, Labour or Lib Dem supporters within Scotland who support independence?
Yeah, well, I think the latest poll showed us that, in terms of Labour supporters, you've got quite a substantial amount of Labour supporters now support independence. But of course, that is only about 8 or 9% based on the last election. I think that you've got, you look at John McDonnell's intervention, you've got a lot of Democrats that, are traditional Labour supporters. A lot of them have already come over to the SNP. But regardless of whether people stick to their traditional political partisan affiliations or not, I think we've got a pretty strong message here that over the last, say, 3 or 4 years, people across Scotland have seen the Labour Party completely abandon and desert them. They've seen the Tory Party completely let them down. That's why the Labour Party finished fifth, which, I mean, was unbelievable, even when I was in school, that the Labour Party would ever finish fifth in an election in Scotland. The Tory Party, I think, certainly there is a buoyancy among some elements with Boris Johnson, but I think anyone that likes the idea of a Boris Johnson no-deal Brexit is certainly not going to be somebody that votes for independence anyway. So I think that strong SNP manifesto of actually giving the people of Scotland a choice between Boris Johnson's bargain basement Brexit, no deal Britain, add as many bad things onto that as you want, versus the choice to have all the choices. I think that's a message that the people of Scotland will support.
That's a thing I always say to people. I discuss politics quite a lot. I sit at Costa and I always have two nationals. I read one and meet one. But what I'll say to people is, yes, if you want independence, if it comes to it, you'll have to vote, I'll say SNP or Greens, for an independence party. But after that, parties will form. New parties will form, because you won't have Labour, Tories, Lib Dems controlled from London. There will have to be Scottish parties. So politics will change within Scotland, and after that they can vote for whoever they want.
I think it will become a lot more mature as well. You look to European and Scandinavian countries and people actually get forced to work together, and surprise, when people work together, it's not the worst idea. But whereas at the moment we've got a two-party system, same in America, same in the UK, that almost tries to dominate politics, and it's ultimately it's bad for democracy.
And when it comes to it, they're controlled by London. So there'll need to be Scottish Labour, Scottish Tories, whatever, and they'll need to have a mind of their own and not be dictated to by London.
Well, that happened with Mention Ireland again at independence. government in 1922. A lot of the old unionists supported the dominant party that came out of that, which is the one that's in power just now, slightly changed their name. Men became senators in it too. Since there was no point in being a unionist party, and they didn't get on anyway very well with the North of Ireland unionists. And they found crude.
Modern Ireland's maybe a better example. If you think of the cause of Scotland versus the cause of Ireland and Brexit. Ireland's sitting with 27 pals backing up, and the United Kingdom's looking pretty isolated, whereas the Scottish government consistently put forward reasonable, absolutely reasonable propositions for how we can try and fix this so that the 62% of Scotland that voted to remain, how their viewpoint gets taken into account, how the views of Northern Ireland get taken into account. The views of Northern Ireland have absolutely became the fundamental issue of Brexit, whereas the views and the cause of Scotland has been just completely and utterly ignored.
The thing is, they've done the special deals for Gibraltar, but there's the Falkland Islands, nobody's discussed that. 95% of their fishing goes to Europe. They're wiped out if they don't do a deal.
But how do you do things in a democratic way if you have a media like we have?
You've just got to talk and communicate.
Have you watched the Scottish questions?
You need to buy two copies of the National and leave them in the poster. The problem is I've subscribed to the National on my phone, and it's quite an expensive habit to just leave your phone for.
But it's worth
someone.
It. If it gets the message out there, it's cheap.
Well, that's one of the changes that we have. There is an actual nationalist media now, which the one in the past that was mostly of internal ones like the Scots Independent, which again, that's the same with Northern Ireland.
You only have to watch the Scottish
Freeman's
questions
Journal.
On television in Parliament down in Westminster when the rest of them are shouting and talking and laughing. They're not listening. And Ian Blackford's trying to say something.
Yeah, go home.
Okay, we all know the grievances. Anybody have any other questions for Chris?
Why should we support a failed motion?
I think it was first of all, this is a new amendment, so we've taken on board the feedback that we didn't engage with the wider party before proposing a policy change. Up front, I don't agree with that stance it was taking, so I don't think you should need to engage with the membership before you propose a policy change, because conference is the supreme policy making forum. The membership certainly wasn't engaged when we decided to support a second EU referendum via the Andrew Marshall, and the wider membership wasn't engaged when we decided to have what people thought was quite a polarised debate on NATO. So I thought it was absolutely legitimate for people who are democratic elected members of the National Executive and parliamentarians to make policy proposals, which we have been discussing in the press for over a year. But in terms of that feedback, as you can see, the support from branches is starting to get quite overwhelming. Almost all branches that we speak to, regardless of their opinion on some of the very valid points that have been raised tonight, or whether they support what we're proposing, actually support having a debate. It's very New Labour-esque to just say that actually, the established order's correct, so come on, back in your box, don't be proposing something else. We're more than happy, and we would more than welcome people to come up on a conference platform and bat us out of the park in a debate and beat us in a debate, because that then means actually maybe our idea wasn't that good and the idea that conference has decided to go is better. But we think we've got a good idea. Not everybody might agree with it, but we certainly think there's enough support across the grassroots that it at least merits getting debated at a conference. And I think a key point for many members of the SNP that joined the SNP after 2014 because they just wanted to campaign for independence, and of course many people that have been doing that for many years before 2014, we should be going to an SNP conference and we should be talking about independence front and centre of our conference. It's controversial, it gets you into trouble, you get put in the naughty boy step for saying it, but conferences aren't great when we just talk about all the good things we've already done, because people in Scotland take them for granted. You know, when we go to the next election, we've had free tuition in Scotland now under the SNP for so long. People don't realise that every year Dennis Mackay sets a budget. He's got to put the money in that budget to keep that policy. Same with free bus passes, same with free prescriptions. So it's perhaps after over a decade in government, you've got to actually start talking about what we're going to do. And ultimately, after 12 years in government, now is the time of we cannot convince the people of Scotland. The whole graduate's philosophy was we work with devolution, we show people that we can take devolved services and we can absolutely deliver services as good as anybody else. Or we're not confident that after 12 years in government, of governing Scotland, that the people of Scotland put their trust in us, that we can deliver all the functions of an ordinary independent country, then I think we need to consider what we're here for.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks
indeed.
Very much. And I'm more than happy to thank everyone and go away and let you have a debate about the amendment yourselves. And but either way, I very much appreciate your support and letting me come along
thank
tonight.
You. I think we'll just have a discussion among ourselves.
It's absolutely
and
appreciate.
We'll send you an email. Or
very much appreciate that.
Thank
thanks.
Thank you
much.
Very much.
Thank you. Thanks
thank
everybody.
Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio. Indie Prime.